The Devil's Advocates radio show is broadcast under a time brokerage agreement between Devil Radio and Civic Media, Inc. Some portions of this program may be pre-recorded. Warning! You are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever, and due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. Now live from the Civic Media Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning, welcome to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
And now, here's your hosts, Dom and Kroot.
Welcome to the Devil's Advocates radio show, the Thursday edition. A little buddy joining at 4. Hope you stick around for the entire 3 hours. We expanded 3 hours. I'm glad you folks listening right now. You notice, thank you. Dominic at 4 and another fine Civic Media host, James Sintel, joining us in the 5 o'clock happier happy hour. So today, you got to commit all 3 hours. And I'm going to have a little bit of fun in multiple phases of the show today, I'd like to think. I actually put pen to paper. I have drafted an alternative State of the Union address for our pal Joe Biden. But it's too early to share that. I gotta hear Dom react. I gotta hear Dom react in real time. He won't have read the script. He'll be completely unfamiliar. And I'll spring it on him. Crudy's version of the State of the Union address that I think Joe Biden should give tonight. Are you going to watch? Who's watching? Who's listening? I think they're playing it here on the Civic Media. My understanding it is newest edition Maggie Dawn and news director Terry Bell. Did I get that right, Aaron?
It's Maggie Dawn and then Stuart J. Waddles.
Oh, Stuart. Stuart, one of the fine journalists from the WRJN. Met Stuart like a year and a half ago when WRJN joined Civic Media. Stuart, a fine journalist, he preceded Civic Media with his journalism. So he'll be a fine choice. That will be on tonight right here on the Civic Media Network, especially those stations, you know, that play the politics. And the Badgers have their last home game, senior night. Tyler Wahl going out, hopefully on top, hopefully with a nice run through the Big Ten tournament, hopefully with a nice March Madness run. I'm a big fan. Don't know if you know that. Four of the Civic Media stations are going to take the Badger pregame show about 5 o'clock tonight. Badgers tip off. Don't, you know, you don't have to leave us early. Badgers don't tip off till 6. So if you're listening on WFHR, well, never mind. You're not the Badger stations. Don't worry about it. All you local Badger fans, you can listen however you listen, but I would recommend the Civic Media app, WRJN, where Stuart Waddles is from. That's my favorite of all the sports channels. So tune in there. That'd be my encouragement. State of the Union, Thursday edition. Also, lead headlines from the state of Wisconsin. Ron Johnson denies, he's denying, he knew about the attempted fake elector handoff despite newly released text. Now, we've had conversations quite a bit this week. The Kenneth Cheeseborough and Jim Troupas document dump. They were forced by civil lawsuit in their settlement to release the hounds, all the tapes, all the documents, all the emails. So as they've trickled out, and fine journalists have, you know, done their homework, burrowed through these copious notes of the coup to be undertaken, Ron Johnson's name came up. And here is how Lawrence Andrea reports it. And I met Lawrence yesterday. Fine gentleman. Ron Johnson denies. Of course he does. I've heard Ron deny before. Ron's been on the show. Once upon a time, he was a frequent flyer on the show. And I know it seems hard to believe. Ron Johnson has done like 26 long form interviews with Crudy and Dom. And Dom blackballed him. Just for the record, it wasn't even me. It was Dominic. He blackballed him. Why? Well, it's the January 6th. And perhaps Ron's involvement therein. And certainly Ron's minimizing of what happened that day. You know, just some tourists staying within the red velvet ropes. Well, here's the newest reporting. U.S. Senator Ron Johnson is standing by his claims. He knew nothing. He did not know. He was trying to deliver fake elector packets. This seems totally implausible. I got to interrupt. Can't even make it through the sentence. Totally implausible, Ron. I'll start over. U.S. Senator Ron Johnson is standing by his claims. He did not know he was trying to deliver fake elector packets to Vice President Mike Pence ahead of the certification of the 2020 election, despite texts released this week showing he was explicitly told the documents were about the electors. Do you understand how this would not hold up in a court of law? If he had to put his hand on a stack of Bibles and he made this denial, well, he would be perjurious because he did know. That's what the evidence would suggest. Johnson today told the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and here's a, what do you think the fine senator from Wisconsin said? I had no idea. The documents.
My lack of involvement was seconds worth of texting.
If that was Ron Johnson telling his wife about his involvement with some pretty girl down at the office party, do you think that would be more convincing to his wife? That's what he told Manu Raju, right? We use that often. We might use that again. Aaron, keep that one handy. So he's still denying, despite the, what do you call that? Evidence that he was fully informed, but I'll continue reading. He claims he had no idea the documents were false elector paperwork, even as the text released for the first time in a tranche of new court documents revealed then-Trump campaign attorney Jim Troupest asked him to urgently deliver a document on the Wisconsin electors. I can see why Ron wouldn't understand the plain-spoken English there. Shortly before Congress convened on January 6, 2021, to certify Joe Biden's election victory. Well, if Ron's delivering them, they weren't the Joe Biden electors. We need to get a document on the Wisconsin electors to you for the VP immediately, Troupest wrote in one text to Johnson that morning. Is there a staff person I can talk to immediately? In a brief interview on the message, Johnson said he had no idea. This is his direct quote. He had no idea that there was an alternative slate of electors. I had no idea. Denies too much. He was asking me to deliver some documents. Johnson said the entire day was about electors and claimed, now this is not a quote, and claimed that it was not apparent to him that the document Troupest referenced was the false slate of Trump electors from the state. I'm too dumb to know better. That's your defense, Ron? Why would I ask questions? Asked what else the document could have been, Johnson responded, I couldn't have cared less. I'm asked by the attorney for the President of the United States to deliver something to the Vice President on that day. Well, don't you seem like an odd conduit? He does, doesn't he? I mean, hey, Pence needs to get something from the president's attorney, so let's utilize U.S. Senator Ron Johnson. Here's more of the reporting. Still, other documents included in this settlement involving Troupest and former Trump attorney Kenneth Cheesebro cast doubt on that claim. This reporting says you might be lying, Ron. In a December 8, 2020 email exchange between Troupest and Cheesebro about the alternative elector plot, Troupest wrote that he, and this is a direct quote, spoke with Senator Johnson last night about the Pence angle at the end. To whom else is he speaking if not you, Ron? A little bit more of this coverage. Again, this is a quote. Troupas wrote, just wanted to take his temperature. Troupas wrote, and in text with Troupas to Cheeseboro on the morning of January 6th, Troupas, he had, and again a quote, been on the phone with Trump campaign operative Mike Roman and Senator Johnson's chief of staff, abbreviated COS, to get an original copy of the Wisconsin slate to the VP. Now, the false Trump electors, they weren't getting to the church on time. There was a lot of dismay. Hell, Kenneth Cheeseboro, my understanding, had to go over to the, what was it, the Longworth Congressional Building and then deliver the false electors a quarter mile away over to the Senate Russell Office Building where Ron Johnson's got his office at. As this reporting notes, taken together, the documents provide additional insight into Johnson's connection to the fake elector scheme orchestrated by Trump and his allies. The text messages from Troupas is first written confirmation the Oshkosh Republican was explicitly told the documents were about the Wisconsin electors. Was me. He's denying it. But he was explicitly told, according to the email document dump. Here's more. Correspondence previously released by the Select Committee investigating the January 6th Capitol attack showed Johnson connected Troupas with his chief of staff, Sean Riley, and Riley texted a Pence staff member to deliver, and here's the direct quote, alternative slate of electors for Michigan and Wisconsin because archivist didn't receive them. As you may well know, Pence ultimately did not accept the false elector packets, apparently not properly sealed. And Johnson, over the last 2 years, has given differing accounts of his involvement in the effort. Shortly after the Select Committee first released the text from Johnson's chief of staff to Pence aide, Johnson said he was basically unaware of his office's contact. You know, wasn't me. What a fine defense that makes. Wasn't me. I was completely, unaware. I didn't ask any questions. Didn't want to know what I was being asked to deliver. That's your defense, Ron? He stutters too much for that. I've talked to Ron enough times. When he starts stuttering, you know he's lying. Folks, we're the Devil's Advocates, a Thursday edition. You can play a part. 844-967-2789. It's always best when you play. Wasn't me. That's Ron's defense. Wasn't me. Wasn't me.
Nothing. I know nothing.
No, I didn't. Honest. I ran out of gas. I had a flat tire. I didn't have enough money for cab fare. My tux didn't come back from the cleaners. An old friend came in from out of town. Someone stole my car. There was an earthquake. A terrible flood. Locust. It wasn't my fault. I swear to God.
Charged, never convicted. The Devil's Advocates.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Thursday, Dom would call it Friday Eve. He'll be coming along soon. 4 o'clock, Dom joins. 5 o'clock hour, we've got a fine guest, former U.S. Attorney James Santel. He's going to be part of the frivolity. Will perhaps inquire about whether or not he thinks U.S. Senator Ron Johnson has been criminally implicated in this greater coup scheme. And I'm just a layman, but I think Ron's up to his albino eyebrows. I think he's in real trouble on this one. Today, here is how Ron communicated with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, apparently a short form interview. Johnson said he connected Troupas with his chief of staff, but maintains his ignorance on pretty much all topics. No, on this topic, on this question about whether or not he was specifically being asked to deliver the false electors, you know, the Michigan and Wisconsin ones. Here's what he said today. The entire day was about electors. I got a text from the attorney of the president of the United States on the day we're counting electors asking, Senator, I need to get documents, you know, related, whatever, on Wisconsin electors to the vice president. Can you help me? And I did. What would you do? But I had no idea that there was an alternative slate of electors. None, zero, zip. That was his quote. None, zero, zip. I would point out, once upon a time, and this was way back, right when Donald Trump had been elected, we were just moving into our fresh studios over on Brady Street, Resistance Radio. You know, mostly resistant to the Trump administration. And Ron came down to the studio. And I asked Ron some questions about the allegations involving Donald Trump and porn star Stormy Daniels. Now, you know, not about the alleged raw dogging or some of the other allegations specifically, nothing salacious per se. But I said, hey, Ron, you know, if this had been Stormy Daniels, you'd be shouting it from the rooftops. Stormy, Stormy, Stormy. You know you would. It would sound a lot like Benghazi, Benghazi, Benghazi. And Ron Johnson, who was in the studio at that time, acted a little sheepish. And he didn't exactly, you know, say, I don't want to know what's going on. But here was the explanation he gave. He said, first and foremost, he somehow thinks he's a little older than me. He's right. A little older. But Ron says, maybe you guys are too young to remember this. He said, I know nothing. He pulled the Sergeant Schultz answer out of his ass. You guys remember Hogan's Heroes?
I know nothing. Nothing.
Well done, Aaron. That was his answer on the Stormy Daniels. I know nothing. I see nothing. I don't even want to know what's going on here. Well, here's the problem with that response. And I did challenge him at the time. And if you've been listening to this show long enough, you know this became a promo eventually. But I had to challenge Ron on his response because this was alleged electoral interference. Donald Trump covered this up. Michael Cohen, his former fixer, was out there making very public statements. And Ron was, you know, willing to ignore them all because, you know, it's for his guy. But Ron's whole denial was effectively, I know nothing. I see nothing. It was very Sergeant Schultz. And again, the topic of Stormy Daniels will come up very soon because Trump is now, however, what is this, 7 years later? Now we're going to trial? Now we're going to find out what Ron Johnson could have gotten to the bottom of 7 years ago. Because at that time, Ron, Senator Johnson, the senior senator from the state of Wisconsin, was the chairman of the Homeland Security Governmental Affairs Committee, HISGAC, as it is known. And he had full subpoena power. Full subpoena power. So let's say he wanted to investigate the Benghazi. Well, he would have hearings. He would drag the Secretary of State in under threat of subpoena. That's what Ron might do if Benghazi was the topic. But let's say it was Donald Trump's apparent affair with a porn star, allegedly. Well, he would cover that up and play ignorant. Now, cast forward 2020, sometime in between, you know, there and when we quit having Ron on the show. Well, the troopus, the attorney for Trump, apparently, at least through his own emails, made the admission he had fully informed U.S. Senator Ron Johnson of what the end game was with the vice president. Well, the end game, as we all now know, was a fake electors plot. It was to create the cloud of confusion, the cloud of deceit. That was Kenneth Cheeseborough's assessment. Didn't matter if the court cases were meritorious. Didn't matter if they'd been dismissed. Under the cloud of confusion, there is an opportunity to overturn the will of the American voter. overturn the actual outcome of the election, because January 6th, that's the real date. So when you hear Ron Johnson making these denials, do you believe him? I mean, is it just me? Is it just Crudy? Because I'm like a scale of 1 to 10. I'm putting him down, you know, 1.23. It's pretty low on the scale, Ron. If 10 is sterling, beyond reproach, you know, Crudy-like, let's say, I'm going to put you down on like the lower end of the scale, sir. Do you believe Ron? I mean, I've had this guy quartered on topics before, and his other trick, Mike. I mean, he never ran away from us. He never pretended to be on a cell phone call like Manu Raju got from the guy. But I've heard a lot. Aaron, one more time. Let's play this again for the audience in case someone just joined us late. Let's play.
My lack of involvement was seconds worth of texting.
If that was your spouse and that was their explanation why they were texting, you know, a pretty coworker late at night, would you believe them? If that was their reaction, you know, the only thing that lacks for is a Dominic. That's a long story. If you haven't heard that one, perhaps I'll tell that story again someday. Does not involve Stormy Daniels, but it could have. Folks, we are the Devil's Advocates. 3 o'clock. That's for the Wisconsin Power Hour. U.S. Senator Ron Johnson. I hope he has a good effing criminal defense attorney. I really do, Ron. I think you get more and more complicit in the criminal conspiracy each and every telling. Come back. Your phone calls could be next. 844-967-2789. We're going to compare and contrast the great state of Wisconsin and the Gopher State. You know why Wisconsin doesn't fall into Lake Michigan? Because Minnesota sucks. But not in this example.
So are you going to interview me or are you going to argue with me?
Well, just leave me alone.
The Devil's Advocates, never personal, only politics.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Dom and I were college roommates. I hate to tell the story without him. Dominic and I were college roommates in La Crosse, and that's a border city, if you're unfamiliar. It's over on the western portion on the Mississippi River. And when I would go to drive to work at the local TV station I worked for, Channel 19, I would cross the river. I would technically be in Minnesota. And a lot of our signal pattern, a lot of our viewers, being TV, back when Crudy had hair, you know, they would view us in the Minnesota market. So there was often comparisons being made between Minnesota and Wisconsin. And I'm a big trash talker, you know, because I've always been a total homer. I am down for the Packers, the Badgers, the Brewers, and I don't care much for the Vikings, the Twinkies, or your Gophers. You know, hometown rivalries, all that kind of stuff. Paul Bunyan's axe, the fact that you've won no Super Bowls. Love trash talk in Minnesota. But there's some interesting new reading out here. I found it an opinion piece, Dave Zweifel at the Cap Times. He compares Minnesota a little bit with the state of Wisconsin. And he offers this opinion as a headline: Minnesota is proof that Wisconsin Republicans are dead wrong. Here's what Zweifel writes in part at the Cap Times. You might think that Minnesota leaving us economically in the dust these past several years would give our legislators pause. You'd be wrong. Republican Wisconsin legislators don't like to talk about it. But if the economy were sports, our neighbors to the west would have given us an old-fashioned butt-kicking. Well, I'd say. The Washington-based nonprofit Economic Policy Institute recently compared the two states' economies since the 2010 election of Republican Scotty Wanker Walker in Wisconsin and Democrat Mark Dayton in Minnesota, the two politicians with vastly different policy agendas. Now, Walker and the Wisconsin GOP-led legislature have pursued, as it's described here, a highly conservative agenda centered on cutting taxes. That's the old trickle-down theory, right? Shrinking government. And, oh, yeah, weakening unions. In contrast, under Dayton, Minnesota enacted a slate of progressive policies. They raised the minimum wage, strengthening safety net programs and labor standards, and boosting public investments in infrastructure and education, financed through higher taxes, oh God, but primarily on the wealthy. Oh God, they would also, they would lose their minds. They would become apoplectic, these Wisconsin Republicans. We cannot tax the job-creating job creators, right? Can't tax anybody. If they ever made a nickel in their life, can't tax them. That puts an undue burden on the rest of us. But anyways, back to Minnesota. Some 7 years after the two governors' terms, the Institute compared how the two states' economies fared during their tenures. Now that there is ample data to assess which states' economies delivered more for the welfare, that means the general welfare, of its residents. Here is a sample of what the EPI found. Job growth in Minnesota grew 11% compared to Wisconsin's 7.9%. That was the wanker policies that were supposed to be, oh, so good for job creation. 250,000 jobs that man promised us and promised us. Hell, he had 8 years of promising us 250,000 jobs. To the best of my memory, never got there. Now, Minnesota's wages increased by nearly 10%. Wisconsin's 6.4%. Household income in the Gopher State jumped 8.5% compared to Badger's 6.4%. Again, they're beating us. That's like a 25% drubbing. And the disparity between men and women's pay fell 3% in Minnesota and about 1.5% in Wisconsin. Union membership in Minnesota fell by 0.4%. That's negligible. Compared to 15.2% in Wisconsin during those 7 years. And Wisconsin workers under union contracts declined from 14.2% down to 8.3%. That's the legacy of the wanker. He decimated the unions, right? He decimated the working man, effectively. The collective bargaining agent of the working man. That was his legacy to this state. And the Institute reported that in 2010, the share of the population without any health insurance was actually larger in Minnesota. So when this started, Minnesota had 9.8% uninsured, unhealth-insured people. In Wisconsin, it was 9.4%. But by 2016, Minnesota's uninsured rate had fallen 5.7 points down to 4.1. Wisconsin was still at 5% uninsured. So the EPI's report noted that Walker, the wanker, had contended that his agenda of shrinking the public sector and reducing the power of unions would lead to stronger private sector growth. That was his claim, right? It was the Reagan mantra. It's trickle-down economics. He's still claiming it, which would ultimately lead to better economic outcomes for Wisconsin workers and their families. 7 years later, it added, there is no evidence to validate this claim. And unfortunately, things aren't looking much better in the years since. According to the report from the Minneapolis Star Tribune last summer, Minnesota's gross domestic product, let me say that again. Too much reading alouding. I'll stop it in a moment. Minnesota's gross domestic product grew, how much was it? Bested the nation in 2023, 2.2%. Wisconsin's growth was 1.5%. Another troubling statistic, according to The Economist, Wisconsin has twice the number of people incarcerated than our neighbors to the west, spending tens of millions more on its prison system. Now, here's where I differ with your opinion, Dave Zweifel. It's over $1 billion per biannual budget. Tens of millions grossly underestimates how much we squander on the Wisconsin prison system. And I don't know if you've been watching the headlines across the state. Another dead man at Waupun. They continue to find contraband. I believe Tony Evers is calling in, what, the federales to try and take control of this Waupun maximum security prison. And we expend, and it's been a while since I looked up this math, but we in the state of Wisconsin expend about $2.6 billion per biennium, two-year budget. Minnesota, $1.3 billion. Half. Half. They spend half as much incarcerating their own. They got Minneapolis. They got St. Paul. It's not like they lack for big cities in the state of Minnesota. It's not like they've got rampant crime and they just let the criminals run the streets. That is not the case. No more than right-wing talk radio would make that same claim in Milwaukee or Madison. And I'm in Madison. Pretty damn safe here. One of the best places in America to live, retire, et cetera, et cetera. But the Walker policies, they didn't hold up. They do not hold up. And the state of Minnesota, economically, under Democratic leadership, has done substantially better than our great state. And it's a little galling because I like to talk trash. And I cannot talk trash about Minnesota's outcomes. A little bit more from Zweifel here. So you might think that our legislators would try to understand what's going on here and work to change what's becoming embarrassing, he writes. No, they refuse to even look at the state's woeful $7.25 minimum wage. You know, that's still the minimum wage. Scott Walker could have raised that. For those that are new to Wisconsin, we still have the federal minimum wage of $7.25. It's been that way for, damn, what, going on 20 years? Scott Walker, singularly as the governor of the state of Wisconsin, had at his discretion the right to raise the minimum wage to a living wage. I believe that's Wisconsin state law. So he could have interpreted the law that way and singularly raised the minimum wage. And of course, chose not to. Change the language of the state law rather than changing the outcome for the state workers. And here we are. $7.25 minimum wage. Stubbornly declined to expand, talking about the Republican legislators led by Robin Voss. They haven't expanded Medicaid. That is the most indefensible policy as a fiscal policy, as a budgetary policy. You know how much money we are wasting, giving away, not collecting? And we should be providing a better quality of care for Wisconsinites. And instead, we are still fighting, what, the battle of Obama? Because Scott Walker wanted to? Because he didn't want any money from the black president? Because he was going to run for president, don't forget. It was all the long game for Scott Walker. But that was a long time ago. Wisconsin Republicans, why are you still fighting the battles of Scott Walker? Anemic job growth under the Walker administration, under your shepherd? Was it the wonderful outcomes at Foxconn? Is that what you're hearkening to? Is that what we should look for? Anyways, back to Zweifel's piece. Stubbornly failed to expand Medicaid, which would help some 80,000 working poor get health care coverage and drag their feet on helping young families with child care costs so spouses could join the workforce. Instead, he writes, they fritter away their time in Madison on the cultural wars, threaten the university system with massive budget cuts for pushing diversity, introduce bills to change the state's lauded election system, threaten impeachment of state officials with whom they have ideological differences, and of course, sponsor bills to prevent local governments from making their own decisions to serve their citizens. Now comes yet another initiative to guarantee Wisconsin will continue to lag behind our neighbors. Republican state reps Ty Bowden of Stockbridge, Elijah Binky of Oconto, and Jay Gobin of Hobart have introduced a bill to end what is known as the Green Tier Program. That's an environmental compliance audit program. Both programs are overseen by the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. You know how they hate those people. Green Tier is a volunteer program under which participants agree to improve their environmental performance. Under the program, for instance, companies agree to enact environmental management system to help them reduce energy use, waste, and pollution. The DNR helps by conducting audits to see how well the system is working. Now, local governments can join, and the DNR assists with annual reports to document efforts to achieve priorities they've outlined. Around 50 companies with 166 facilities and 35 local governments are taking part in the program that the three GOP legislators, well, they want to outlaw. We're trying to do better on our own. We're trying to save money for the city, says Bayfield Mayor Gordy Ringbird. He told that to public radio. It doesn't hurt to live in a clean place where the air is good to breathe and the water is drinkable and people can swim in the lakes. That's all good. But not in the eyes of the conspiratorial legislators. They're convinced that the Green Tier program is part of a United Nations plot to disrupt the world to address climate change, which they aren't convinced is real in the first place. And the UN's stated agenda aims to achieve 17 goals by 2030, including ensuring access to education and water and promoting sustainable energy and taking action to combat climate change. It also seeks to end hunger and poverty. Anyways, I'm going to jump down to the end here. Meanwhile, Minnesota is surpassing us on fighting climate change. Last year, the state passed a law that will give every Minnesota access to carbon-free electricity by 2040. But facts like that make no difference if you're hell-bent on chasing boogeymen and enraptured by conspiracy nutcases, as the Weefle writes, all of which, of course, goes a long way explaining why our state is falling behind those who actually believe in governing. Like Minnesota, they do it better there. I hate to say it, it might be true. More Devil's Advocates, we do it better right here. Join us, 844-967-2789. Best friends set me down in the salon chair. Shampoo press get you out of my hair. Fresh photos with the bomb lighting. New man on the Minnesota Vikings. True hearts needed something more exciting.
The Devil's Advocates, political commentary from the back of the class. The dining room
proudly presents your dinner. Be our guest. Be our guest. Put our service.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the State of the Union Thursday edition. You know, the president is going to speak tonight. You can hear it right here on the Civic Media Network, playing out Joe Biden, playing out some Badgers. Hosting Rutgers Senior Night tonight. Check your local listings. Guest for the State of the Union address. And it's kind of a big deal. And the Congress people and the senators here from the state of Wisconsin, they get to select special guests, people from their community, whatever. Somewhat unknown what the criterion might be, but I've got a list of who will be accompanying whom to the State of the Union tonight. Where'd I put it? I'm not great with the computer machine. Sometimes I double trick myself. Here we go. President Joe Biden is set to deliver his State of the Union speech tonight at 8 p.m. And several guests from Wisconsin will be there to watch the annual address in person. It's a tradition for lawmakers to invite guests that reflect issues that are important to them. I can't wait to find out what Derek Van Orden's bringing. The White House also invites guests to sit with the First Lady, and the Speaker of the House can invite additional guests too. Well, MAGA Mike, he'll invite whoever he wants. He's the Speaker of the House. I'll keep reading. Wisconsin's Democratic members of Congress have announced who they've invited. Republican members, well, they're playing coy. They haven't announced if they've invited anyone. Do you think they're going to be jerks? Is that the plan? Like, I don't want to embarrass my guest, but I'm more than willing to embarrass my state and myself. Because there is some commotion afoot that there will be an effort to disrupt the president, Joe Biden. When he speaks, these Republicans are going to catcall him. We've seen a lot of disrespect in the chamber. But here is what we do know about the who's who of guests. Rashawn Spivey, the owner of Hero Plumbing in Milwaukee, will sit in the First Lady's viewing box. Spivey was also part of the president's visit to Milwaukee in December. I believe I saw him there, riding with Biden in the motorcade and introducing him on stage at Wisconsin's Black Chamber of Commerce. While in Milwaukee, Biden visited Spivey's business, where Spivey showed how to replace lead pipes. His invitation reflects the administration's goal, and here's a quote, to replace every lead pipe in America in the next decade, the White House said in its release. The White House says Spivey and his team have replaced more than 825 toxic lead pipes, primarily at local daycare centers. Milwaukee has replaced 6,400 lead service lines since 2017. That's out of about 70,000, so still a big project ahead of them. I noted Don Brown, our friend from Waukesha, does the Waukesha, This Week in Waukesha, Saturday mornings. Get up early, tune in to Don. But he was very proud to announce on his social media page that the Waukesha police chief, Daniel Thompson, will be a guest at the State of the Union address of Tammy Baldwin. Waukesha police chief Daniel Thompson was invited by Democratic U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin to attend the address. According to a release, Baldwin and Thompson will be highlighting their work to combat opioid and fentanyl epidemics. In the battle against the opioid epidemic, it requires leaders and stakeholders to unite and declare enough is enough. I take pride and am humbly honored to represent the brave and dedicated members of Wisconsin law enforcement who tirelessly confront this crisis daily, Chief Thompson said. So he will be Tammy's guest. I don't think Eric Hoadvey gets a guest. Baldwin and Thompson wrote an op-ed together that published Wednesday in the Journal Sentinel and said they'll be representing all of those who lost lives to this epidemic, representing their loved ones and representing those helping fight this crisis. In a joint call with reporters, Thompson said, attending the address, in all my years, I got to do some really neat things, but this is way up there. Now, last year, Baldwin invited David Hoadvey, a type 2 diabetic and Medicare recipient from Appleton, to the address. Hoadvey, who died in May of 2023, was a cousin of Eric Hoadvey, who's now Baldwin's main Republican challenger as she runs for a third term. Planned Parenthood of Wisconsin President Tanya Atkinson will be attending as the guest of U.S. Rep. Gwen Moore, that's Dom's congresswoman. Here's her quote. Moore's quote specifically. As reproductive health care and women's right to control their own bodies continues to be under threat in Wisconsin and nationwide, Tanya's presence will serve as a powerful reminder of the importance of protecting a woman's right to make her own health care decisions. Again, Planned Parenthood of Wisconsin President Tanya Atkinson going to attend Joe Biden's State of the Union address as the guest of U.S. Rep. Gwen Moore. Who else do we have? Mark Pocan is inviting AFL-CIO President Liz Shuler. While not a Wisconsin guest, Democratic U.S. Rep. Mark Pocan announced he's inviting Liz Shuler, the president of the AFL-CIO. In a statement, Shuler called Pocan a champion for working people. Here's what Pocan said. With Liz at the AFL-CIO and President Biden in the White House, workers have their strongest champions in years. In 3 years, President Biden has prioritized American workers, bringing them to the table when moving legislation forward and strengthening their workers' rights. A little bit more from my congressman? No, that's it. So we know who the Dems are bringing. Who do you think Ron's bringing? Will he be represented by counsel this evening? Will he show his yellow belly in the chamber this evening? Well, I suspect he'll want to be there to taunt the president, you know, should he stumble. And the rest of them, you know, be a toxic Tom Tiffany or Scott Fitzgerald or Derek Van Orden especially. I would expect, you know, some sort of tomfoolery from any of those three. Glenn Grothman, I'd throw him in that mix. to not announce who your guest would be. Well, if you do bring a guest, if you bring a plus one, well, that's a little dishonorable to him. Now, I can understand Glenn Grothman a little more than the others. Always struggles for the plus one. After our buddy Scott Ross got married, I think Glenn Grothman might be Wisconsin's last confirmed bachelor, if you know what I'm saying. Folks, we are the Devil's Advocates. I got Dom joining me next. He's married, as am I, happily, most days. We're going to have a happy hour, Devil's Advocate style, and a happier happy hour with Jim Santel, former U.S. attorney, joining us in the 5 o'clock hour. You're going to want to make a 3-hour commitment to the big show today, because I have written a draft of what the State of the Union should sound like. I'll play it for you soon. Come back. More Devil's Advocates. It's a happier hour.